The Bethlehem Center in Chattanooga's Alton Park neighborhood is a nonprofit learning center devoted to empowering inner-city youth and families, stepping up to challenge after challenge, especially in the past few months. Reginald Smith II is the center's executive director.
Reginald, thanks for joining us.
Happy to have you here, sir.
Tell us more about the center's mission.
Well, historically, for the last, actually, we trace our history back to 1920, so this would have been our 100th year celebration year. But historically, we've engaged in working with our community and youth to empower inner city youth and families to lead responsible lives through education, discipleship, and leadership development. So what that looks like for us is we have after school programming, we have adult education programming, as well as a host of community center programming that we offer to really support the true needs of our community.
How have you been operating at this time, living with COVID-19?
We'd like to say that we were able to really kind of pivot really quickly into moving away from the things that we historically have done, but with the same mindset of saving, well, not necessarily saving, but helping the community the best way we can. So immediately, once schools decided to end school for what would have been their first 2 weeks, we said, okay, well, we no longer have an after school program. Let's switch into making sure that we can support the children through other mechanisms. And that's when we started doing, like most nonprofits that serve youth, started serving meals to the children. We recognized that if we're serving meals to the children, we also need to serve meals to their families as well. Luckily for us on site, we also had a food pantry. So we switched into a gear of being able to support those who were out of work and not able to go to a grocery store. We were one of the Restore Hope sites, and we still are participating in that as well. Even after it's now formally kind of been pushed back to United Way, but we have provided somewhere close to around $60,000 in rental support and, you know, allowing individuals who've lost their jobs due to COVID to still be able to maintain their bills. So I always like to tell people we're not a social service agency, but at the same time, we are definitely moving more and more to the social services type of operation mode here, because at the current moment, that's what our community needs.
And you are in your office now, and you're not the only one in your office, but you have to follow the guidelines for social distancing.
Yes, I am in my office, and I always like to, you know, I guess when I'm talking to my staff and everyone, this is kind of my control center. It's impossible to do the work that we need to do and not physically be here. With that being said, we are practicing social distancing here. On all of our desks, we all have our hand sanitizer. My entire staff is wearing masks as we traverse the building. We kind of have this 6 feet rule that we've kind of multiplied. You should not be within 12 feet of anybody else at any given time here. That sometimes is a little hard to maintain because you have to walk down main thoroughfares. But in order to really make sure that we're going to be the most efficient we can be, we have a really good mix of if you can work from home, you are working from home. My immediate staff that works in the after-school program were retransitioned into new categories here. So they're either working with food prep or in some kind of planning capacity to do some other things. A lot of my executive staff, from my development team to marketing, they're all working at home. And so we're able to coordinate via Zoom. But for the people that are in the building, yes, we're taking the social distancing very seriously. One important thing to note is we're all trying to get back to normal. We really value our young people. And so we are trying to transition them back in very small numbers. Historically in the summer, you have about 150 kids here at the Bethlehem Center. Right now, we have a club-based approach to where we may have 10 at a time for 1 to 2 hours. We're operating that in partnership with a couple of other organizations. So we are working with the Partnership of Family, Children, and Adults and have a program in place right now called Camp Hope this week. Next week, we'll be operating with another group of 10 students, and we'll be partnering with the Boys and Girls Club and their Tennessee mentoring initiatives. We've mastered working with partners to kind of spread out as much of the resources that we have to maintain support for our community. But we definitely make sure that if our children are in the building, they're social distancing, they have masks, and we only have small numbers who only are together.
What are you hearing from families and from community partners at this time as cases are spiking?
Things are very uncertain. Originally, we were all kind of planning for a June 1 return to normal. We knew that wasn't going to happen. We were planning for that, right? And then, of course, that got pushed back to June 15th, then July 1. Now we're looking at, okay, well, maybe at some later point, we'll be able to get back to normal. In terms of partners and in terms of other nonprofits, we're part of every nonprofit consortium around town. Everybody's pretty much uncertain. We don't know what the future holds, but we know that it's our job to kind of hold the line. In terms of parents, I think it's a very underrepresented voice. They're frightened. We know Hamilton County Schools is slated to start back. My educational director is actually a part of all of the conversations with Hamilton County Schools. But with the spikes in cases and knowing that children are a little different than we adults who see the world differently, we don't really see a path to where we're going to be exactly normal. Now, we know Hamilton County is doing a wonderful job of trying to plan for what we can have and see in the fall. But from an organizational standpoint like mine, who historically work with children in the out of time spaces, what does that actually look like? How do we support the school system in reopening? How do we support schools when not all of the children are going to have to go back at the same time? With everything changing, it's frightening. It is definitely a period of uncertainty. But of course, we have faith that everything will kind of get back to some sense of normalcy. But for the most part, right now, we're just really, truly, we plan to plan to plan. And more times than not, we scrap those plans and pick up a new one.
One thing that we've heard from the protests in recent weeks has been calls to invest in Black and Brown communities in this city. I just wanted to get a sense from your vantage point, where are the gaps that are being echoed in those protests? Where are the gaps that you and your team and the partners are seeing out in the community that need to be addressed?
I can definitely look at it, I guess, from this perspective. From what I have been able to listen to the individuals who are out and protesting and listen to the individuals who are not, but have very strong feelings on both sides. One thing that I think that this country is definitely going to, and I feel very hopeful about this, is that we actually start to have a true conversation about, we've always been talking about equality, but now we're moving toward equity, right? When it comes to education, especially public education, you see some extreme equity gaps. What we know and what the data shows about crime in general, right? Well, I listened to the calls for the defunding or of the police to reinvest, not necessarily to get rid of the police department, but to reinvest those dollars into programming to prevent crime. We know that the societies with the higher educational attainment and access to education, true access, have lower criminal statistics. We recognize that if we invest some of those dollars in that, this is something that a police department's funding through a city wouldn't necessarily be able to do here in Hamilton County because the school system is a county-led initiative. But there are organizations, there are programming that are in place to prevent young people from going awry. There's also looking at possibly reinvesting dollars into programming to actually retrain individuals who, A, either don't have any initial training to begin with, or retrain individuals who are not able to do their older job. There are individuals who are coming out of prisons and jail who could potentially want to actually work every day and don't want to reoffend. But if we're living in a society in which people typically don't have too many options, then human nature kind of takes over. And if survival is the primary mechanism that in a lot of cases drive crime in poverty-stricken areas, what we typically tend to find is that they really don't have any other choice. And like I said, that is definitely not an expertise of my area to talk about this particularly. But what I do recognize is that if you invest in young people on the front end, you have way less problems on the back end. What people think is actually investing is not throwing money at the problem. Okay, I have $100 million, we're going to throw $100 million over here with no oversight. And that's not going to work. We are a 100-year-old nonprofit organization because, A, people trust us, people support us, but we're able to actually accomplish things. We set real actionable goals and we accomplish them. And those goals are measured. So many times, sometimes money ends up in the hands of groups that have great intentions but don't necessarily know how to execute out on it. Or they have great intentions, but it doesn't necessarily equate to something that is measurable, so we don't really know what the impact truly is. So in my personal opinion, looking at those best practices that exist elsewhere around the country, because there are some really good models for what can be done to work with young people, whether it be if you don't want people to join gangs, find an alternative to them joining gangs. If young people have something to do, they're less likely to join gangs. If you want to prevent people who are coming out of prison from going back in, find a way to employ them in areas in which they can physically do the job and they're trying to do the job, I've never seen a man say, I've been at work all day long, now let me go rob somebody. That just doesn't work. By doing that, we can solve, you know, two problems with one stroke of the pen.
And all of this that we've been talking about up to now has been happening alongside the economic blow that this community has sustained. And not so long ago, the tornadoes that ripped through this area as well.
Yes, that is true. It's kind of like and amongst my friends, and it sounds crazy, and certain generations will get this. It's one of those things to where, are we playing Jumanji in 2020? Seems like every month is a different level, right? As soon as COVID happened, okay, we were able to transition into that. Well, then tornadoes happened. I was from the school of thought that I didn't want to lay off any of my employees, so I would do everything I can to keep them actively working. Well, that meant, okay, great, I have a few employees who I really don't have anything for them to do. Well, now you guys go help out here. We have a couple of church partners who were heavily involved in that particular type of work, and it was easy to transition them to go volunteer to support that. They've been nonprofit organizations who in the same boat. Hey, Reggie, do you need any help at the Beth? We're going to send our people to work there. That way, we'll keep our people actively engaged. But it seems like every single month is something new. With the protests and everything that's taking place, it really kind of allows for us to sit back and really say, number one, we as the Bethlehem Center, what is our response to this? How do we support all of the individuals? Naturally, we feel for our community and we want to help our community. So we want to make sure that we're here to back them up and support them. It's just so much at one time, but yet we never shut our doors. We're still here. Now, though the agency's doors are physically closed and they're shut, we're still here supporting them in any way we can that's within our purview of our mission that we can do it.
And where can people go online for more information and to support the center?
So you definitely go to thebeth.org to learn more about what we do, because I know that in this interview, we only covered a fraction of what we do, but definitely go to our website, check us out. Under normal circumstances, I would say, show up. We'd love to give you a tour, which we still possibly can do. Just call me first and I'll make sure that it's the right time. But definitely look at us on the web. If you are interested in supporting our mission, you can donate there, as well as you can text Give Relief to 243725 if you're interested in supporting us financially there as well.
And the phone number?
Phone number. You can reach us at 423-266-1384.
All right. Reginald, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you so very much.